I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Most of us have seen a parent mistreat their child in some manner, whether it's belittling them, yelling at them, cursing them, slapping them, or even hitting them. It's a deeply disturbing experience, and it's not always clear about the right thing to do. Victor Fiorello intervened 2 times when he saw children being abused by their mothers, and he blogged about it at phillymag.com. Victor is a reporter for Philadelphia Magazine, and he joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Victor, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And we asked Joshua Halberstam to join us as well. He's taught philosophy and is the author of several books, including Everyday Ethics, Inspired Solutions to Everyday Dilemmas. He currently teaches communications at Bronx Community College of the City University of New York. And Joshua Halberstam, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Victor, let me begin with you, and I guess begin with your most recent incident. You had two of them, one in the summer and one most recently. You were in a trolley in West Philadelphia. What did you see?
I did. I ride the number 10 trolley through West Philadelphia to my home in Overbrook pretty much every day. And the other day on Tuesday, I was riding the trolley home and saw a very stressed out mother yelling at her child, cursing at her child. She had 2 children, actually. One was, I would guess, maybe 4. The other one was probably 2 or younger. And she was getting more and more aggressive with the children, and it eventually erupted in her hitting the one child repeatedly. She, you know, had completely lost control. You know, the whole time that this was escalating, I, you know, was paying very close attention. She was basically sitting right in front of me. And, you know, there were a lot of other people in the trolley, some of whom were paying attention, some of whom seemed to be ignoring it intentionally. And eventually I spoke up and, you know, told her that if she didn't stop hitting the child, that I was going to call the police.
And did you mean that?
I did. I actually told her that I would call the police, get off the trolley, follow her home, and wait until they showed up and arrested her.
And what was her response to that?
She stood up, spit in my face, as she was dragging the kids out of the trolley. It happened to be her stop where all this went down. And, you know, when she was exiting the door, she said, you know, that's the problem with all you blank white people. And then she left the trolley.
Why did you do that? Why did you intervene? Why did you, in a sense, threaten to call the cops on her?
Well, I mean, she was, you know, I have my own opinions about corporal punishment. I don't hit my own kids at all. I realize that some people spank. You know, this had reached a level that was far beyond any kind of appropriate behavior. And, you know, it wasn't just the act of hitting. It was her rage and her sort of going off the deep end that made me think, you know, parents kill their kids. I mean, like, bad things happen. This is a reality, and this could very well be happening with these children. And, you know, I didn't know if I should speak up or not. Nobody else was, and eventually I had to intervene.
Do you think about those kids now? I mean, this was something that happened in public on a trolley. There were a lot of people around. Do you wonder about what happens to them when they're home alone with their mom?
Absolutely. And, you know, some people have called me on the way that I dealt with this problem and basically said, you know, what do you think happened to those kids when they got home? You know, and I...
Did you think about that before this?
I definitely think about that. And, you know, it's a very complex, difficult problem, hard to deal with. You know, but in the end, I feel like those kids are in a very bad position. The mom, I find it hard to believe that this was some isolated incident, that this was a great mother who has never hit her kids before and doesn't hit them at home. It had reached that level. And I just thought, you know, I need to speak up, because what we're really talking about here is protecting children. And, you know, the fact that there were at least 20 other people on the trolley.
And are you the only one that said anything?
I'm the only one that said anything. And
To this mother.
And, you know, the other element here is that, you know, of the 20 people on the trolley, I was the only white person. And, you know, that definitely was factoring into my hesitance to get involved, because, you know, I'm not just a guy who's interfering with mother's parenting. I'm the white guy interfering with the mother's parenting. And, you know, I think that definitely plays a factor in this.
Let me turn to you, Joshua Halberstam, and what we heard was Victor Fiorello describing something that happened on a trolley here in Philadelphia this week. And I began by saying, you know, we have all seen some version of this. Are there right ways to approach a situation like this, deal with a situation like this, or is it just so situational it's hard to come up with a guideline or a rule book?
Yeah, well, obviously getting a guideline is going to be difficult here, but I think what Victor's situation really points to something very significant, even beyond worrying about the welfare of children. It strikes this whole question about where does your line of behavior have to stop, and when do you become meddlesome, and what's your business and what's not your business. And that's why it's just a difficult dilemma, because on the one hand, not doing anything means that you're not responsible for what goes on right around you. And on the other hand, there is a sense in which people say, listen, just mind your own business, and this isn't your business. And it raises the question I think Victor was pointing to, is that in this particular case, is there a question here about different beliefs about what's appropriate way to discipline children, which aren't? And that's what makes it particularly difficult. Because is it your sense of that you believe that this is wrong to hit a kid? Is that, do you have a right to impose that view on other people? But in this case, the violence seems to have gone beyond what would be reasonable to allow. So it's complicated.
It is complicated. And this is with, of course, I wasn't there, and it's an advantage of 2020 hindsight, and also, you know, thinking about what I might do in these situations. And I have to tell you, Joshua Halberstam, yeah, I don't know what I would do in these situations.
Right. And you're also personally afraid. I mean, that's the other factor over here.
Exactly. But I wonder if, and I'm thinking about people listening, if there is another way to intervene, which is to, in a sense, help this mother deal with children that might be having some issues on a bus, rather than saying, I'm going to call the cops, but to try to figure out how to help her deal with what she is clearly overwhelmed by and not doing well at all.
Yeah, and can you do that realistically? I mean, play social worker.
Right.
Say, hey, why don't we still talk to each other? The parents obviously lost it over there. And just very parenthetically, to point out the differences that we have about that. In Europe and a couple of other countries, there are 26 countries where hitting a child is illegal. The United States is not one of them. In the United States, spanking, for example, is permitted. There's no legal, there have been Supreme Court cases that have, in local states, that have said that you can't hit your kid. So, you, I mean, going to the cops would be problematic, too, even here in the United States, because they can't do anything unless you can show really excessive abuse.
Right.
So we can see that around the world there are very different attitudes about this. And the parent might just say, I am doing the right thing. So it gets, that's another problem over here.
Indeed. And Victor, let me go back to you, because you wrote about a piece today, essentially talking about the response to your article and also what some of the quote-unquote experts have told you. What did they tell you? What's been the response?
The general consensus with the experts that I've spoken with is that the answer here may be to exercise some kindness. And when I first heard this idea, I kind of laughed at it and said, you know, that's never going to work. But, you know, one of the experts I spoke with, you know, said to me, what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose by, you know, saying a kind word to this woman? And if she spits in your face, she spits in your face. But she also might calm down. And, you know, I've decided that, you know, I think that it might be good advice. You know, one commenter on our website, thephillypost.com, said, you know, you say in your article that this woman was jammed into a two-seater with two kids and a stroller. You could have offered her your seat. And you know what? She's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm looking at the way that I dealt with this and, you know, how I would deal with it in the future. And, you know, I think I'm going to try the kindness. I'm skeptical.
I can see that on your face.
But, and if it doesn't work out, then, you know, then I'm going to do what I have to do. I mean, we're talking about protecting children here, and that's the bottom line.
And would you agree with that, Joshua, that is the bottom line? It's about protecting, in this case, vulnerable children.
Clearly, yeah. But I think that it's also important to see this case as being emblematic of a lot of situations where people feel put upon in moral situations and wonder whether that they should say something. I mean, for just as other examples, I don't want to veer too far away from this particular case, but you're sitting at dinner and somebody says something outrageously obscene about or racist or something. You know, it's a standard ethical problem. Do you say something, or do you mind your own business? Or do you feel obligated to say something in response to that? Here in New York, where I live, there's a law now that doesn't allow people to smoke cigarettes in the park. And people have said, you know, if by making everything into a legal issue, we lose the social cohesion of being able to tell somebody, can you please put that cigarette away? My child is with me. And if immediately the immediate response is always to go to the police, then you lose this, like, a sense of community. And that's one of the things that is upsetting to me. And but I think the idea, one of the things we've lost in this culture altogether is our notions of shame, of embarrassing people by saying, what are you doing? And to such an extent where that might be a preventative. So if, you know, they're yelling at this woman on the train, saying, what are you doing to your kid? If that person would have felt ashamed, that might have worked. But apparently that feeling of shame is no longer a preventative. And so then now people say, just mind your own business.
Well, let me pick up on something. And even going back to this incident, Victor, I mean, you were angry, right? You were angry at the way this mother was treating her children. Would you say that was the emotion that drove you? I don't want part.
I would say that I was sad and I was scared. And then I became angry. You know, and I think that what Joshua was talking about before with, you know, the different countries that say you just can't hit your kid. You know, I think that we do have a real attitude in this country that this, in a lot of cases, is acceptable behavior. If we didn't, more people would intervene. And I think that is what we need to change. If you beat up an adult, you go to jail for an assault. If you beat on an animal, it's cruelty. If you beat on and beat on and beat on a kid, it's discipline. I can't agree with that.
Joshua, we're almost up on a break here, but you talk about shame, and I guess the idea of by shaming someone, you are embarrassing them. You are saying you should be literally ashamed of yourself for what you are doing.
Yes, and I think that doesn't seem to be nearly as potent in contemporary America as it is in traditional cultures. And that's a problem, because that means that when Victor's getting up there, you would think the woman would be ashamed of herself and stop for those reasons, because everybody would look at her and say, what are you doing? But I think the natural response here is to say, I'm not ashamed at all. You should be ashamed for intervening in my life and for imposing yourself on my life. And that whole notion of shame seems to have dissipated, and I think that's a real loss. No longer becomes a viable way of getting people to stop doing things that are in public.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Joshua Halberstam. He teaches communications at Bronx Community College of the City University of New York. He has taught philosophy at a number of universities, wrote a book called Everyday Ethics. Victor Fiorillo with us here in our Philadelphia studios, talking about some incidents here in Philadelphia where he intervened, where he believed that parents were abusing their children. That's our conversation for today's Radio Times, 1-888-477-9499.
The Violette DeMazia Foundation supports WHYY. Are you an art lover? The Violette DeMazia Foundation teaches ways to appreciate works of art wherever you may encounter them. Registration is now open for a variety of programs focusing on visual art at various locations, including the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Chester County Historical Society, and the Wayne Art Center. Classes are appropriate for anyone interested in discovering a different way to see art and life. Registration at www.demazia.org.
New Hampshire voters have strong opinions about presidential candidates.
You can't trust them. I just saw it in his eyes.
He seems to give answers. The others seem to give stories. I like them.
I'm Melissa Block. On Tuesday, January 10th, voters in New Hampshire will cast their ballots, and we'll bring you results, reaction, and analysis. Live coverage of the New Hampshire primary from NPR News.
Coverage begins Tuesday night at 8 on WHYY.
Starting in 2012, the Sound of Young America will become Bullseye. The same great content, the same great signposts to what's good in popular culture. but now with a name that you're not embarrassed to say out loud. So, The Sound of Young America, Bullseye, starting in 2012.
Tomorrow night at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and today on the show, we're talking about how to do the right thing if you witness something out in public that disturbs you. We've been talking about some incidents where one of our guests, Victor Fiorillo, saw parents, mothers, young mothers, yelling at and cursing at and hitting their children. And he is a reporter for Philadelphia Magazine. Joshua Halberstam is also with us. Wrote a book called Everyday Ethics. He teaches currently at the Bronx Community College of the City University of New York. He has taught at New York University and teaches college at Columbia University, has taught philosophy. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to get to our callers, but Joshua, just picking up on what Victor had said before the break about the advice he got about being kind. Does that seem like the moral, the right thing to do, at least initially when observing something that seems disturbing, especially if it involves children?
Well, it sounds like, you know, it would be a good first step. I mean, but again, in the real world, when you see parents who really lose it, and it's very, very paradoxical. I've seen parents hit kids for hitting other kids and yell at the kid and say, "Don't hit when you get angry. When you get angry, you should talk about it," and then smack the kid across the face. And the kid's going, "Wait a minute, I'm getting mixed messages over here." Because when parents lose it, they hit. And telling them to be kind, I think my guess, because I've been in situations like this, is that even then, what do you do when the parent says, "Just mind your own goddamn business"? Right. And that's what you're likely to hear. So it's not, kindness may not work. And if they continue hitting, then we're back to our dilemma again. So it's very nice to talk about kindness, but I don't know how real that is in the real world.
Go ahead, Victor.
But I think I do see some sense to it if you engage the problem earlier, you know, that there might be a chance to, calm the situation down. You know, had I offered the seat to the woman, you know, just to interrupt and distract, I could have possibly said, "Oh, you know, wow, I have two kids too. I mean,
I can feel your
pain," and just see where that goes. And it might just calm things down enough to say, "Hey, you know, let's keep our cool here."
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm gonna find out. I'm gonna do it and let you know.
But I just follow up on something that Victor said, which I think we shouldn't completely avoid in thinking about it, is that there are different cultural attitudes about hitting here that are very deep. I know that where I teach in the Bronx, which is my students tell me that they think it's absurd not to hit their children. They just find this bizarre. They think this is the most natural way to do discipline. And our standards about what we consider outrageous behavior, other people might not. That's what makes this problem particularly sensitive and difficult.
Well, Joshua, just even picking up on that, Victor mentioned the fact that he was in a public setting, and in these two instances, he was the one that intervened. Most people did nothing. Help us understand, I guess, that I think it's called the bystander effect, the idea that, that people will stand by in certain incidents, and there are probably a myriad of reasons why. Can you talk a bit about that? Then we will get to our callers.
Sure. I mean, there's a very Kitty Genovese case that was in Queens where a woman was yelling that she was being stabbed to death, and some 30 or so people looked up and opened their window. Everybody assumed that somebody else would do something, and the woman was actually stabbed to death. Mm-hmm. All it would have taken would be one phone call. And so sociologists have called this the Genovese effect, where everybody assumes that somebody else would do something, and it has this mass effect of inaction, precisely because you assume, "Hey, I'm not going to be the jerk to do it, and why doesn't somebody else say something?" Mm-hmm. And if nobody says anything, then nobody, in fact, ends up doing anything. This is it's a very well-established phenomenon in human culture, and that's why it's very brave of you, Victor, to be the one to stand up, because most people say, "Hey, no one's doing anything. Why should I be the jerk?"
It's not my business. Yeah, go ahead, Victor.
I think that there's a real safety issue here as well, and when I've posted this on Facebook, you know, my Facebook friends are quick to tell me to wear a bulletproof vest. There was an incident that some of your callers, listeners, may not know about. Back in the spring of 2011, There was an incident in Philadelphia on a SEPTA bus where a mother was apparently spanking her child or hitting her child. Someone intervened. She made a phone call, and a group of armed men met her at her stop and then shot the bus up with automatic weapons. And there are six people standing trial for that this year. So
it can be dangerous.
It can be dangerous.
Well, it's a very volatile situation. You see something, you don't know everything, right?
Sure.
You don't
right.
know what led up to that, and you don't know, frankly, what's going to happen afterwards. So you're in this very sort of momentary situation.
Absolutely.
Let me get some callers in on the conversation, and we have it looks like Robert from North Philadelphia. And Robert, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi
How
there.
Are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I wanted to share a story about one day when I was on a job. I was working my area. And while I was in the area, I witnessed a woman pushing a stroller with a baby that didn't look any older than 1 year old. And the baby was crying profusely. I don't know why. But the mother, you could tell she was overly frustrated. She was yelling, cursing. And at one point, even said, I hope you hit your head. And when she walked down the street, it even looked like she punched the baby. And as much as I wanted to intervene, the few things that came to mind was, one, that I was on company time. And two, that same story with the SEPTA incident just really held me back, and I just felt helpless. I felt like I didn't know what to do, and I just felt like a coward.
Mm. Well, Robert, first of all, I appreciate you calling into Radio Times, and I think we can hear in your voice the upset over this incident. Let me give Joshua Halberstam a chance to weigh in on your comments. Any thoughts, Joshua?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why this is such an excruciating dilemma. And, you know, one of the things is that people say, and I noticed this in some comments in your blog, Victor, that, you know, you're not going to make a difference anyway because, you know, these people are going to go home and this is the way they treat their kids, and what's the point of doing this intermediate intervention because it's not going to make a difference because, you know, it's still going to be this case that kids are going to have to suffer from this later on. On the other hand, that's why I mentioned this thing about shame. I think there is an argument that says, hey, you know what, even if it's not going to make a difference, but we publicly have to call people out for doing this kind of thing. We have a much better world than when we do that, and a much worse world when human beings just slink into their own little lives and say nothing. So and that's why it's a tricky dilemma. But there's a real payoff here, and it's not trivial.
And it's not trivial. Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that, Victor, from Robert's call?
You know, I think that you know, most of us you know, are in the same boat as Robert was. You know,
right.
we see these things, we go through all these thoughts in our head, and, you know, then the problem goes away. And later, when we get home, we might think about those kids and like, wow, I wonder if I should have intervened. You know, I think we just need to say, yes, we do need to start intervening. We need to change this, because if I speak up and Robert speaks up, and you, Marty, speak up, and Joshua speaks up, well, suddenly I think this is not going to be so acceptable. but, you know, we have to get over this fear and this reticence to speak up and say, no, this is wrong. You cannot do this. And, you know, we need to put an end to it.
Robert, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I'm also wondering, and Joshua, and I'll put this to you, Victor, as well, and then we'll get our third guest to join us, but, you know, to get into the mind, the experience of the child. I mean, on the one hand, you could see a child saying, well, here's an adult who's standing up for me. I mean, I'm putting words in their mouth, obviously. They may pay a price for that, but maybe there's an adult that was in my corner in this situation. I mean, that I think that could be, Joshua, part of a scenario.
Right, and maybe you're suggesting, Marty, here that it also might be confusing for a child.
Yeah, it could be confusing for a child.
This is my mom, and somebody's attacking my mother, and yelling at my mother for doing what I always assumed was her parental obligation and the way I was brought up, and now that might be confusing. But so that would seem like, you know, we're being put into positions of being social workers here at the moment, and not just simply good citizens or fellow citizens. And that's why you know, it gets very complicated. And but on the other hand, you might say, you know, whatever the child thinks now, they'll maybe understand later. But I have to do something immediately, and you know, I'm not being a vigilante. I'm just trying to protect the kid. And your question about how the kids react, I imagine that will depend a lot on the age and
sure.
all kinds of factors.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let me introduce the two of you and welcome our third guest in, and also give out that phone number at 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about what you do when you witness something as disturbing as seeing a parent beat up on a child or curse at a child or belittle a child. We've all seen some version of that. Victor Fiorello observed that two times in Philadelphia, wrote about it. He's a reporter for Philadelphia Magazine. Joshua Halberstam joining us by telephone. He teaches communications at Bronx Community College at the City University of New York. He's taught philosophy at NYU and the Teachers College at Columbia University, author of several books, including Everyday Ethics, Inspired Solutions to Everyday Dilemmas. And joining us now is Dr. Maria McColgan. She's director of the Child Protection Program at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children. She's a pediatric advisor to Prevent Child Abuse PA. And Maria McColgan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you here. And we've been talking about Victor's experiences. We've been taking some calls as well. I know you know a little bit about what Victor did when he observed some mothers beating up, as he would describe, on their children on a bus. And what is your advice to us, generally speaking, when we see something that we don't like, the mistreatment of a child in some way?
Hearing what you guys have said a little earlier, speaking up is definitely something that we all need to do. We need to get involved. We need to take this on as something that is a huge public health issue. When you see something on the street, we always are a little bit afraid to get involved because, you know, we fear for our own safety, but we also fear for the safety of the child. And you do have to, there are things that you can do. We are, with Prevent Child Abuse Pennsylvania, looking at a program called One Kind Word, which is based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This is a program to teach individuals what they should do when they see a distracted or stressed out parent, using one kind word to help them realize what they're doing and to sort of interrupt the moment. So, for example, if you see that mom who's screaming at the child, try to make eye contact with that mom and say, you know, I know it's really tough taking care of kids this age. It must be really hard on you and really stressful, to strike up a conversation. Or maybe distract the child to change their behavior and sing a song, something of that nature. So by using one kind word, we can all do something to change the moment.
Well, and going back to you, Victor, this is something that you wrote about today and some of the advice that you got about using one kind word or several kind words.
Sure. I mean, as I said before, you know, I don't have anything to lose by trying that. You know, I have my doubts about it, to be honest with you. And, you know, a lot of the people that I've spoken with who aren't experts, who are just sort of more, you know, real normal people who haven't read a bunch of studies, but who ride buses and trolleys and shop in, you know, crowded malls, you know, kind of roll their eyes at it. But, you know, I'm willing to give it a shot. I think that, you know, we need to solve the problem, and I'm willing to explore different avenues.
But going back to you, Maria McColgan, are you saying that this works?
Well, one thing we know that doesn't work is if you go up to a parent and say, how dare you hit your child, what a terrible mother you are, we know that's not going to work. And Victor's experience was that mom turned around and spit in his face.
Right.
So we know that that's not going to work. And this isn't about passing judgment, whether or not they're a good mom, a bad mom, or otherwise. This is about the welfare of the child and the family and helping them to change their ways and to change society's view toward looking at hitting a child, the way we look at hitting a child. I once heard someone say, you know, that hitting a child equals assault, hitting an animal equals cruelty, but hitting a child equals discipline. Well, that doesn't make sense. Why are we so accepting of anyone hitting our children? So I do believe that it could work if we all speak up and we all become less accepting of it, because we now know there are studies that show that hitting a child for discipline does not work. It may stop the behavior the first time immediately, but it does nothing to change the behavior and shape the behavior in the future. And it also leads to more aggressive behavior in that child, more anger, more likely to hit themselves. So if we know it doesn't work and it actually leads to negative consequences, why would we be so accepting of it? So we need to all speak up so that the general attitude changes toward it.
Joshua Halberstam, you want to weigh in on that, and then we'll get back to our callers.
Yeah,
does that make sense to you?
It does. I'm a little wary about some of those studies. I mean, I actually, as a parent, don't hit, you know, never hit my kids and wouldn't even think of doing so. Yet there are, I mean, I've read some studies where psychological punishments, where parents can be really much crueler than just smacking a kid, And again, there are a lot of cultural factors involved where people think that smacking a child is a much cleaner and faster and you're over with it punishment. Now, I'm not talking about beating a kid
right.
as opposed to... And again, as I mentioned earlier, we can see how different countries have very different rules. The United States is one of the countries that makes it legal to hit a kid, whereas other countries in Europe, like Maureen's positions, have now outlawed it outright. So there's a lot of different opinions about what's the best way to punish a kid. And a lot of people will tell you that, you know, that some of the psychological things that parents do to kids is much crueler.
Mm. Let me get actually Randy, who's been waiting very patiently, Randy from Doylestown, to join our conversation. You're on Radio Times. Randy, go ahead.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a distinction between hitting a child and corporal punishment. I was raised down south, and I can distinctly remember when I misbehaved, my parents would send me to my room. I would sit there 5 or 10 minutes. They would come in and lecture me and then spank me. I mean, there would even be, if I misbehaved in a car or at a store, there was always a really distinct gap between the behavior and the actual corporal punishment, and it also always led up with a lecture. And I think that sometimes when you see this happen on the street, it's more out of anger, and that can be where it's like borderline abuse. So I can always take my comment off the air.
Randy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Maria McColgan, can I give you a chance to weigh in on that?
Oh, absolutely. If a parent does choose to use hitting as a means of punishment, then that is exactly what I would recommend that they do, not to hit in anger, because when you hit in anger, that's when it can become dangerous and border on abuse and lead to abusive situations. So if a parent does choose to use hitting for discipline, that would be the right way to do it, to get yourself calm, discuss why the behavior was wrong, which can actually be used in lieu of the punishment, in lieu of the hitting. So if a parent chooses to hit, that would be the way I would recommend doing it, but I adamantly recommend not hitting.
Go ahead, Victor. It looks like you wanted to add something.
It sounds like the caller's parents loved him very much and, you know, had a distinct sort of method to their discipline of him. You know, and I think that, you know, I was accused in one of the comments of abusing the abuser, you know, who was herself probably abused growing up, you know, and I get that. But, you know, I think that at some point we have to hold people accountable mm-hmm. for the way they're treating their children.
Mm-hmm.
And there are obviously many issues, many factors that do go into this. But, you know, I think that, again, the bottom line is that this behavior is wrong mm-hmm. and we need to figure out a way to stop it.
Absolutely. And I've actually had children tell me that their feelings toward their parent hitting them and what they would like their parent to do instead. And I had one child a couple of weeks ago tell me, I'd like my mommy to say, I'm sorry for hitting you, and you're the best daughter, and I will not hit you anymore, and I will just talk nice to you. Mm-hmm. So this 8-year-old child was able to put into words better than we probably ever could on what should be done instead.
Well, we are talking about doing the right thing for kids in public when we're witnessing parental outbursts, and our guests are Dr. Maria McColgan, Joshua Halberstam, and Victor Fiorillo. And we have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Randy, thanks for the call. We'll take some more calls after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Penn's College of Liberal and Professional Studies supports WHYY and offers an interdisciplinary Master of Environmental Studies program for students who are passionate about clean air, clean water, and a clean earth. Academic work on local and global environmental issues is combined with fieldwork around Philadelphia and around the world. Details about pursuing your passion for the environment at Penn can be found online by searching Penn MES. Penn's College of Liberal and Professional Studies.
The sketch comedy series Portlandia begins season 2 this week on IFC. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with co-creators and co-stars Fred Armisen of Saturday Night Live and Carrie Brownstein of the indie rock bands Slater Kinney and Wild Flag. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll take a look at voting requirements, seesawing claims that voter IDs prevent voting or prevent fraud. Also, class boundaries and World War I bombs exploding in the return of PBS's Downton Abbey. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Imagine you're playing in a park with your kids, or you're riding on public transit, or even shopping in a supermarket, and you witness a parent cursing at or hitting their child. What is the right thing to do? Is it the business of a stranger to intervene? Our guest, Victor Fiorillo, intervened two times on here in Philadelphia, wrote about it for phillymag.com. Also with us is Joshua Halberstam. He's the author of a book called Everyday Ethics, Inspired Solutions to Everyday Dilemmas, and Maria McColgan, Director of the Child Protection Program at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children, also Pediatric Advisor to Prevent Child Abuse, PA. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What is the right thing to do? Let me see what Billy from Warrington has to say. Billy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I had a very similar incident happen to me. I was in a grocery store, and to this day it still gives me goosebumps. It was so frightening. But I saw a woman, and as we were going through the grocery store, we're kind of always in the same aisle, and I could see her anger really getting aggressive with the child. She was really getting angry. And when I was checking out, she abandoned her cart and went to her car, and I thought at that point, oh my gosh, that child's in trouble. So I thought, the right thing. I had my two little girls with me. I went outside, and I was trying to be kind and understanding, and I approached her. And I wanted to approach her where there was nobody else around so I wouldn't embarrass her. But I kind of was a mother, and I knew. And I said to this woman, I said, oh, you know, there'll be better days, there'll be better days. Mm-hmm. That woman turned and verbally attacked me, saying the most vile things in front of me. My two young daughters were with me at the time. Everything that she was going to give that child, she verbally gave me. Now, I quickly retreated out of fear, plus the embarrassment that my girls had to hear this terrible stuff that she was saying to me. So what are the better things to say when I did try to do it in a very kind and loving way?
Well, Billy, you should be congratulated for trying to address the situation, certainly with kindness. Let me give Maria McColgan a chance to weigh in on that. Should Billy have done something differently?
You know, I think what she did was fantastic. However, I think if a parent is already at a point where they're so irate and out of control, that is probably a dangerous time to try to intervene. And at that point, you may want to, I would probably take a different tactic and probably call 911 at that point if I was fearful for that child. Mm. We want to try to intervene before it gets to that point, with the types of things that Billy tried to do. And she should be commended for trying to be kind and relate to this mom to try to help. But I think once it has reached out of control, that can be a dangerous situation.
Well, it's interesting that Billy says this is an incident that she has thought about for some time, wondering whether that mother has thought about it as well. Victor, anything you want to add?
Dr. McColgan, you mentioned that you might have called 911 in that case. In reality, from my understanding of it, a lot of these things, you know, if the police showed up, really wouldn't amount to anything. And it's unclear to me that what I witnessed on the trolley the other day would have been considered by a district attorney to be child abuse.
Right, and that's actually part of the problem at the state of Pennsylvania is our laws are very restrictive, and the law says that it has to be severe pain or impairment, rather, to rise to the level of being called child abuse. However, we do have children and youth agencies who do a wonderful job of offering preventative services when a family can be identified and there are concerns. So there are things out there that can be done. Is our goal to make that parent go to jail? No, of course not. We just want to improve the situation for that family. And there are services in the community that can do that.
Joshua, let me turn to you, and this is more, I guess, philosophical question, but you're our resident philosopher in this hour of Radio Times. And as I said earlier, sometimes I think you don't know what you're going to do under these circumstances. Mm-hmm. But are there ways to sort of think through what your values are, what you believe in, who you think you are, that might prepare us to deal with situations like this?
I think you're pointing to a very serious and the important underlying question here. I mean, we have two interlocking issues here. One is, as Maria has been pointing out, we've got to get society to learn to stop allowing spanking and hitting as a way of disciplining. That's one set of concerns. And the other issue is about whether or not human beings should intervene in the lives of other people when they see something which they find to be immoral. And in this particular case, you've got both of these things working at the same time here. And I think if we really believe seriously that hitting kids is the wrong way to discipline, and wrong in the moral sense, in the deepest sense, not just in terms of parental discipline work, then we should be very staunch about that and take that seriously and say, no, this is unacceptable mm-hmm. behavior. And once we can get that, we can start teaching people that it's unacceptable. And we also have to, the other, and pari passu, at the same time, we have to get human beings to realize that other people's lives are our business. And when we do see something wrong, it is incumbent upon us to say something. But you have to feel secure enough to think to yourself to say this is unacceptable.
And have sort of thought through some of these scenarios, saying, now what would I do under these circumstances?
Yes. And of course, you know, at the spur of the moment, obviously, there's going to be every one of these cases is going to be contextual. I mean, how dangerous is it? How effective can you be? But I just wanted to say that even if you think it's not going to be effective and you're not in danger, I think there's an argument for saying something, only so that we can underscore our sense of obligation to other people and to make people feel embarrassed and ashamed and called, you know, get called on for doing things that are wrong. There's a real value to do that, and I think it's important to do that.
Let me see.
I agree 100%.
You do. Let me get some more callers in. And it looks like we have Irma from Garnet Valley joining us on Radio Times. Irma, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm concerned about the kind of protection that's provided for the people when they do intervene. I know the young man personally who intervened on the bus and then found himself in a shootout on the Perceptor bus. And this young man's going to have to go to court. He's going to have to exit that courtroom. And it makes me wonder, will any provisions be made if that young lady had that element willing to take that young man's life for simply telling her to not spank her child? What's going to happen to him? Because some years before, I intervened. And when I returned home, the parent was waiting for me at the door because the police officer had essentially said that the woman upstairs has been listening to your child and listening to the anger in which you used to lash out at your child. So I think that one great concern that many people have when they intervene is there's nobody there that fully understands that people seek vengeance against you when you involve yourself.
Irma, I'm really glad you called in because you raise a really important point. I'm tossing it first to you, Victor.
Absolutely. As I said, you know, on my Facebook page and in the comments left on the article, you know, people keep talking about my safety. I know my mother's praying for me every day. And, you know, I have to say that I thought to myself after the fact, if I say something in these cases, what are the chances, really, realistically speaking, that I am going to get killed or permanently injured? And I think that they are extremely, extremely small. But if I don't speak up, what are the chances that that child is going to be continuously abused and society is not going to change? And the answer is 100%. So to me, it's a no-brainer.
What do you think, Maria? And Irma raises some real live concerns about people that do intervene. And there, as Victor said, we're also talking about a court case here in Philly and involving someone who intervened on a bus and, you know, the bus was shot at.
Well, you know, I do agree with Victor, and yes, we have to keep our own safety in mind. And we already talked about, you know, when the parent is overly irate, that would probably not be the best time to personally intervene. When you do call Childline to report a case of abuse and neglect, that call should be anonymous. That police officer was incredibly inappropriate saying that, you know, the woman upstairs was the one who called. That should be an anonymous call. But we still do need to intervene, and there are lots of ways to intervene even before it gets to that stage. For example, community members can get involved when they know that there's a stressed-out mom on the street, maybe offering to babysit for a half hour so mom can run to the store without the kids, to give her a little bit of a chance to have some stress relief, modeling good behaviors and how to keep children, you know, smiling and happy and playful while you're doing the shopping, things of that nature, so that it's... we can teach people how to do things less stressfully. As far as intervening right then and there, again, I would never recommend going up to someone and saying, "How dare you? I'm going to take your kid from you. You know, you're a bad parent." We need to take a different approach, but we can't sit by idly and silently, because it will continue. That we need change.
Irma, I appreciate that call to Radio Times. Let me see what looks like Paul from Frankfurt has to say. And Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I just want to give you a little bit of background. When my daughter was two, my ex-wife left me, and that really hurt me, and I know it hurt my daughter.
Sorry to hear that.
But to get to the point here, I've intervened probably 10, 15 times in these kind of situations, and what I try to do is, sorry, I have asthma. What I try to do is I try to speak in the place of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, if it's, you know, whatever the case, "Mommy, I'm a little boy. Please be patient with me."
Well, that's interesting. And I heard you, Maria, say, uh-huh.
Yes, and one of the things that you can do to intervene is to talk to the child. You know, if mom's looking and she's getting angry because the child's trying to climb out of the cart, say, "Hey, little cutie, how are you?" And engage the child, and that may change the child's behavior by engaging their eye contact, et cetera, making it a little bit easier for the mom. So it doesn't always have to be about approaching the mom. And I recommend that people get training on how to do this. There are programs out there to do that training. I mentioned One Kind Word, but there are others. There's another called Front Porch Project. So there are programs out there to teach community members how they can get involved.
Paul, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Joshua, anything you want to add before we get to our next caller?
No, I just said on the other side of this, there one also has to be careful that what you consider, inordinately indecent behavior on the part of the parent, maybe on borderline cases, maybe ones where the parent thinks that they're within the realm of what's acceptable, and then you're imposing your own notions of that. So that, you know, they'll say to you, "Listen, I'm not abusing my kid. Slapping my kid once across the face is not abuse, and stay out of this." So, because I know there are these cultural differences, and I just don't want to go by without notice, where people think this is not abusing my kid, and you're just imposing your own sort of notions about this on it.
And that's, of course, where it gets very, very, very tricky here.
It gets tricky.
Indeed. Yeah. Let me see what it looks like Mary from Vincenttown has to say, and that would be number three. Let's see if we can get Mary on Radio Times. And Mary, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Marty.
Sure.
It's Mary. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a really big fan.
Thanks.
I just have a story to share. When my son was young, he had a playmate, and this boy's mother and myself, we spend a lot of time together with play dates and school get-togethers, things like that. This boy's mother was completely stressed out all the time, and would scream at this little boy constantly, hitting him, punishing him. She had no patience whatsoever for any of the little boy things he did. And it was horrible to watch. It was exhausting to be around her. She was not open to any criticism of her behavior at all. And actually, she would look at me very angrily at times because she didn't agree with my more passive approach to parenting. And honestly, I just wanted to put an end to our relationship, but my son really liked this little boy so much that it forced me to employ more subtle strategies to changing her behavior.
Hmm.
Because we spent so much time together, I used things like, you know, kind words, distraction. I befriended her. I never, ever out and out told her that she was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to show by example, because, you know, little boys, they act up for whatever reason. You know, they're tired, they're hungry, they're stressed out themselves.
And Mary,
and I really, I used a lot of the same strategies I used with my own child to get him to act the way I wanted him to act.
And did it work, Mary?
It did work. It took a number of months, but at one point she actually broke down into tears and finally realized what she had been doing and expressed how ashamed of herself she was.
Well, Mary, first of all, you did a great favor to a mother and to a child as well. Let me give Maria a chance to weigh in on that.
I couldn't agree more with everything you said. Change doesn't happen overnight, and sometimes it takes people a little while to see the need for change. And with education and modeling that good behavior, you eventually got through. And that's what we need to do. We need to prevent these behaviors by teaching appropriate parenting behaviors, by talking about it, by not being afraid to say, no, I don't hit my children. I tried this instead. I tried this and it didn't work. I tried that and it didn't work. But I tried this and it works and I've been consistent with it. And so we can teach parents other ways by not accepting hitting as a reason. And I don't, even though there are different cultures and different levels of acceptance of it, I don't think culture is an excuse to accept hitting a child.
And we have about 30 seconds, and I actually want to go back to you, Victor. You started this conversation. Is it going in, and I don't mean this on Radio Times, but you've been blogging about this, writing posts about what your experience is. You've been getting a lot of reaction. Is this a conversation you want people to have?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's, I think Dr. McCullough, I think you told me that child abuse is the single biggest
public health
issue in the United States. And I think that it's something that we need to be talking about every day.
Right, and by changing our views toward corporal punishment is one of the ways to prevent child abuse.
Well, I appreciate all three of you joining us today on Radio Times. Victor Fiorillo, thank you very much. He's a reporter for Philadelphia Magazine. Joshua Halberstam, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
He teaches at Bronx Community College of the City University of New York. And Dr. Maria McColgan, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. She's a director of the Child Protection Program at St. Christopher's Hospital for Children here in Philadelphia. We appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. You can also go to whyy.org/Radio Times and find out much more about the program, including Facebook. I'm sure there's a conversation there that you can join on this very topic. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.